Hey, boys and girls, welcome to the NeoWincast News Edition for February 23rd, 2007. I'm your usual host, Chris Mandemio, BangBang023. Joining me, my best friends and yours, Todd Tanner, you know him as Locke, and Rob Wright, you know him as Rob. How's it going, guys?
Hello.
Good to have you back, Todd.
I'm back.
Not if we have anything to say about it. I kid. I kid, Todd.
See if I help you in co-op or Crackdown now.
I just screwed myself over. Yes, by the way, Crackdown is a very addictive game. Oh, but before we get into today's stories, we have to mention that based on the whole thing with Crackdown and the Halo 3 inclusion, it seems as though more people did agree with Rob than they agreed with me. So, congratulations to Rob.
Yeah, right. Thank you.
Rob just knows the people's opinion, I guess. Damn.
You guys, I'm a man of the people, that's what it is.
Yeah. We'll see about that. All right, we're gonna move right into our first story though. It's a doozy by Microsoft. They were actually serving up spyware through their Windows Live Messenger advertisements. Oops. You know, I'm sorry. It wasn't through Messenger advertisements. It was through their MSN group servers. I didn't even know MSN groups were still up. But apparently, there was an advertisement on the group's pages that was installing some pretty nasty spyware called System Doctor 2006. Irony, anyone? And the funny part is, too, is, well, with every installation of Vista comes Windows Defender, which is supposed to stop this before it even gets onto your system. But Windows Defender didn't do anything to stop it. And, well, yeah, they put it into their own ed rotation. My question to you is, both you guys, starting with Rob, I guess, how big of a screw-up do you think this is from Microsoft? See, in my opinion, I think it's pretty huge, considering the fact that they spent how many years now trying to revamp their Windows reputation as being nothing but a bed for spyware, and now they're serving it up themselves. What do you think?
It's pretty bad, isn't it? I mean, actually, just you did mention that it was on Windows Live Messenger, and it is as well, actually. It was both MSN Groups Windows Live Messenger that had this, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, double the people. Windows Live Messenger is used by just insane numbers of people, and to serve up some spyware is pretty huge. I mean, as we said before, it's the System Doctor 2006 thing, which is, it's one of these anti-spyware things that it just shows up rogue results just so that it gets you to buy a professional version to get rid of it. It's a typical scam, and it's one that there's a lot of programs going about that do it. But to allow that in your ad rotation is pretty massive. Now, it's not the first time that this has happened, because back in November, Google sent out a message to, it was about 50,000 people, with the Kama Sutra worm, and this was on one of their Google group things, one of the news group activities. And yeah, they managed to send it to 50,000 people. I think it's one of these things that they certainly didn't do it out of malice, but I mean, it's a huge blow for their reputation, surely.
Well, I mean, I always defend Microsoft, and I'm going to defend them here. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think it's big that somebody screwed up and did it. Well, I think it's big that somebody screwed up and did it and screwed up like that, and I'm sure they're going to have a nice little pink slip probably. But as far as a blow to Microsoft, I really don't think it's going to be any kind of blow, because, look, people make mistakes, just like with computers. They make mistakes putting ads on here or, you know, do something that's not normal, let's put it that way. And this obviously wasn't normal. These rogue anti-spyware programs are probably, I think, the most devious programs that you could possibly do. That you use innocent people like grandparents or computer illiterate people download these things and install it, and they have like 6,000 infections. But guess what? You actually got infected by installing the damn thing. So yeah, that's pretty bad. But look, people make mistakes. Whoever made this mistake, hopefully won't get fired. That's, you know, probably what's going to happen. But it happens, you know, and Microsoft isn't the only one. Like Rob said, Google did this back in November. I believe Norton did it a couple of years ago. It might have been Norton or McAfee. I don't remember who it was. Somebody sent a newsletter that was infected with a worm or something. I don't remember. Maybe somebody could help me with that on the forums or whatever. It just happens, you know, and it's a mistake, that's all.
Yeah, but you have to figure, I don't know the exact numbers, I was trying to look them up while you guys were speaking, but MSN/Windows Live Messenger has roughly about 35 million users registered on the network. Granted, not all online at the same time, but you figure there's a large portion of that user base online. That's millions upon millions of customers that you're trying to convince to use your software, that you're trying to assure them that their Windows environment is safe, that you've put steps in place to nip the problem in the butt before it really gets to you. And yet, not only does your own Windows Defender software not pick up this infection, but yet you're serving it to them directly in the first place. Todd, you really don't think it's that big of a deal? I mean, in my opinion, I see this as, it almost seems as though, like, say, take another company, Apple in this case, since Apple and Microsoft always neck and, you know, butting heads. It's almost like Apple having a glitch on their server that lets people download songs from their iTunes service free of charge, where maybe it doesn't damage the consumer's computers, but it's a massive blow against what they've been working for so many years. Microsoft, since, you know, the early 2000s, I guess we're still in the early 2000s, but for 2 or 3 years now has been working to say, our system is safe. You know, that's what the Mac Edge are all about, how insecure Windows PCs are. And now, here they are, the company making Windows, the company reassuring us that it's okay, serving up the very malware that we're trying to prevent. You don't think it's that big of a deal?
No, because it's just a mistake. The only thing that I would consider big out of it, other than the mistake itself, is that Windows Defender didn't pick it up and stop it. That's pretty big if you want to talk about being big here. I mean, the fact that Microsoft's own anti-spyware application didn't stop the infection or the spread is pretty bad. That'll give you, you know. But other than that, no, it was just a mistake. I just don't see it being that big of a deal. Sure, the anti-Microsoft pundits and the Linux fanboys or Apple fanboys, which will, you know, chew me out for this, but they'll be the ones that'll say it's a big deal. The average consumer or the average techie that goes to Neowin should not see this as that big of a deal. It's just a mistake. Windows Defender is a big thing because that should have picked up the problem.
I guess there's truth in that, absolutely. I mean, Windows Defender, it's, as you know, as has been said, it's included with new versions of the operating system, and it's meant to be this, you know, one-size-fits-all approach to system security. But I do think that, as Chris said, it's not, you know, this a trivial matter at all. The fact is, in the current environment we're in, where Microsoft is desperately clambering to improve their reputation after a series of abysmal years of security failings, to have this, like, I just think it's very embarrassing. Sure, maybe, you know, it is just a mistake, and it's just one of those things. Obviously, somebody just overlooked exactly the diverting that was going on here. But I just feel that in a product like Windows Messenger that is used by so many people, it's one of those things you can't afford to be lax on something like that. Especially since, you know, third-party advertisements on your application are, they don't represent your company, but at the same time, because they're on your software, you have a reputation and you have a responsibility to make sure that what's being served up isn't going to harm the consumer. So I don't know, I just think it really is something that is quite significant, and I hope we'll get a public apology from Microsoft for it.
Well, they did publicly apologize, to put that out there. They said sorry, blah blah blah, they're revamping their advertising approval system and such like that, you know, the general PR friendly apology that most companies would release, you know, just insert infraction here, insert company name here, and we're set. But, you know, my question is, if you were affected by this, if you were running Windows Live Messenger like millions of people do, and you were affected by it, would you suddenly think that maybe Windows Live Messenger itself isn't safe? I'm not talking about us. We know it was a one-time glitch. It shouldn't happen again. But for the average user who suddenly is getting spyware from Windows Live Messenger, do you think that maybe you would be inclined to look elsewhere? Never mind Windows, never mind Windows Defender, just on a small scale, would you be maybe inclined to use an alternative instant messenger? Even if you use the same network, where maybe you're going with a Trillion or maybe a Miranda IM, you know, do you guys think that maybe some people were turned off from Windows Live Messenger as a result of this?
No. Okay, let's put it this way. The average consumer that uses Windows Messenger or Windows Live, whatever, the average Neowin user is normally fairly advanced with computer technology and all that stuff. The average person that uses Windows Live Messenger is probably not going to be all that, you know, computer literate. I don't think that And this is just from experience, that they're going to be able to know to go to Trillion or Game or, you know, any of the Linux alternatives or Apple alternatives or whatever. You know, if they're on Apple or Linux, if they're complaining, of course. But I'm saying, I don't think that they're going to know that they can go from Windows Live Messenger to Trillion or Game. My point being that they're just going to see this as an issue with Windows Live Messenger, that it got fixed for, you know, I assume they updated their spyware definitions for Windows Defender and fixed it or whatever they did, I don't know. And it's gone. It doesn't affect them anymore. The computer user that does know about Trillion or Game but hasn't used it yet, which I think is a fairly small portion of the amount of people that would be affected by this, they wouldn't have been affected in the first place because they would either be using Trillion or Game already or using spyware blocking software other than Windows Defender, or they use AdMuncher or a million other programs that would stop ads from being displayed in the first place. I just don't feel that the average consumer who will use Windows Live Messenger that would go to Neowin or Anantech or any of these major websites that already knows about this stuff would even think twice about this, other than being maybe an inconvenience or blaming this one person who made a mistake. That's the way I see it.
Well, I just disagree. I think that, you know, yes, maybe, you know, as you say, the Neowin consumer and all the rest of it, yeah, they won't really care, but for those that, I mean, Neowin is a drop in the ocean when it comes to the number of users of Windows Live Messenger. What we come to is that, you know, the average consumer is not going to see the distinction between having a third-party advertisement cause them to get spyware or having Windows Live Messenger cause them to get spyware. The distinction is not going to be drawn by the average consumer because they're simply going to say, well, I was running Windows Live Messenger and it ended up screwing my computer up. That's what it's going to be like in the eyes of someone who doesn't really care how it's come. So I don't know. I just, for me, I can see that yes, it's more of an issue than you're making out.
Well, that's exactly how it'll be. They'll see it as only Windows Live Messenger giving it to them, but they're not going to know any different from going to Trillion or Game because they don't know anything about it. These people I'm talking about don't even know how to use Google. You know, these are people that just log on, talk to their friends, do some winks here, or go to MySpace or whatever. That's what I'm talking about. They're not going to know, for the most part, anyway. I'm sure some of them do, but for the most part, these people don't know about Google or Neowin or any of these other websites that would discuss this and show them there's alternatives that they can use or how to fix it or anything like that.
It's definitely an interesting issue. I would be a little more careful if I were everyone using Windows Live Messenger. To be honest, I don't use the software. Besides AIM software, I use Miranda to cover all my other IM needs since I have three freaking networks revolving around Neowin alone. But, you know, it's definitely an interesting issue where is an apology enough? Because, you know, you can say sorry, but there are people there right now dealing with what tends to be pretty nasty spyware. This System Doctor 2006 was actually apparently pretty nasty stuff. I would definitely have a sour taste in my mouth if a company served it up to me. I guess I wouldn't be anxious to visit their sites again, because who knows what they'll give me in the future. I'm speaking from a general point of view, of course. But, you know, it's definitely something interesting. They issued the apology. I'm guessing they hope it just falls under the rug and let bygones be bygones, but I'm really not sure that's going to be the case. But what it comes down to, again, is just make sure you guys have protection on your computer. You know, have some kind of anti-spyware, especially when you're running applications like these. I hate to start a possible flame war here, but anything that relies on Internet Explorer to deliver these ads has the possibility of giving you spyware, adware, and such. You definitely do have to be careful and protect, you know, take preventative measures instead of reacting after it's too late. However, we're going to move on to a pretty big story, and this story is actually going to consume the rest of the show because, well, it's a story based around it's called The Gadgets You Shouldn't Buy. Basically, all this cool stuff out there for guys like us who, well, one editor at smartmoney.com, her name is Stacy L. Bradford. Well, she wrote an article of five gadgets we shouldn't buy. We're going to run down through them and see what people think. And first of all, which is a little odd to see on the list right away, it was high-definition DVD players. Now, as you guys know, I'm a home theater buff. I find comfort there. I tend to know a little more about home theater than I do about PCs. So it was interesting to see her say that, well, obviously, I agree with her that maybe you shouldn't buy the players right now, but She says something that just blows my mind here, because it's so stupid to say. Assuming you find a title you want to watch, you may not even realize the picture or sound is any sharper if you already have a high-definition television. The problem is, if you're watching movies using a regular DVD player on an HD TV, you know how terrible it looks because you're running at a much lower resolution than the set is designed for. So obviously, these high-definition players, whether HD DVD or Blu-ray, are going to make the picture tenfold better, easily. I mean, it's night and day difference. There's no marketing here. It's just that simple. A blind man can see it. But what do you guys think about high-definition DVD players? Do you think that people should continue to hold off, that they should just wait and see how the market plays itself? Do you think that maybe the market's going to take too long to play itself out, and that eventually people, to get the most out of their HD TVs, they're going to have to buy into these players? Or is LG's player the one that plays Blu-ray and most of the features of HD DVD minus the IHD feature, is that the smartest choice to make right now? What do you guys think?
I mean, personally, I wouldn't buy, and I haven't bought, any high-definition DVD players, because I don't want to find that it becomes obsolete so quickly. If, for example, if I buy a Blu-ray player and then find that HD DVD wins this so-called war, then I don't want to be stuck with a very expensive sort of doorstop. I don't know. For me, it's not worth buying at the moment. But then I'm not a home theatre buff. I'm just somebody who likes to watch movies now and then. But I just think that it's not ready. It's so immature at the moment. And as you say, it's like, for example, LG's player, it doesn't support some of the features, and it just at the moment compatibility is sort of quite spotty, really. And I just feel that right now, if consumers want to be assured of a purchase that actually can last them, that it's better actually to wait probably until we get something which has got a bit more of a lifespan on it. But I don't know, it's a bit of a naive standpoint I'm taking, because I don't really understand hugely about the issues surrounding it. But at the same time, I just think, well, if there's at all this possibility that something I buy is going to become obsolete, then for me, I don't want to spend the quite large amount of money on getting a high definition DVD player.
Yeah, I have to say, I think people, for the most part, should hold off on buying it until the quote-unquote war is winding down here. I think, for the most part, I don't have an HD TV, so I can't really say from experience, but for the most part, I would assume the leap from regular DVDs to Blu-ray or HD DVD is fairly decent if they wound up putting out players for it in the format. So for someone like Chris or any other home theater buff, then it might be, if they have the money to burn, sure, it might be worth it. But for the average consumer who doesn't even have an HD TV yet, it's definitely one of those wait on the sidelines until the dust settles type of thing. I'd have to agree with the one gadget right there for the high def DVD players.
Yeah, but first of all, I mean, I hope neither of you agree that she says you won't be able to spot a difference between DVD and a high definition DVD player, because that's obviously, she's speaking out of a specific orifice, we'll say. But one thing to consider too is that, I'm an HD DVD fan. I support the format, but it seems as though the tide is shifting to Blu-ray side at this point. An article was released today, actually. It's posted on Engadget, where Blu-ray, for the first time, has surpassed HD DVD in monthly disc sales. Basically, for a ratio of every 100 Blu-ray discs sold, there was 98.71 HD DVD sold. I guess someone got a broken disc somewhere in there. But, it's definitely... It seems to be shifting. There are more players out for Blu-ray. There's more movies coming out for Blu-ray. You can see every week, every Tuesday, there's 6-7 Blu-ray movies coming out, 1 or 2 HD DVD movies coming out. I think that comes down to basically the number of studios supporting Blu-ray as opposed to HD DVD. But do you guys think that maybe with this tide starting to obviously shift to Blu-ray side, do you think that maybe we need consumers to stop buying this stuff in order to make the decision for the rest of the market?
I think, well, how is this decision made? It's only made by watching, people choose and people vote with their feet, don't they? So I guess some people have got to do it, but I do think there's going to be a few people like me who, I don't want to vote. I'm going to abstain here because I don't want to spend my money on something that might not be useful in a year. I don't know, Todd, what's your take on that?
For the most part, I'd have to say wait. I mean, it's just the industry is, you know, they'll just come along down the road probably, you know, fairly soon with something new other than Blu-ray or HD DVDs. I mean, it's just the market is so fluid even for that kind of stuff. It's just, you know, sure, it took I don't know how many years for VHS to finally be overtaken by DVD, and then just now, I just read a story yesterday or today about some company that's stopping any kind of VHS stocking now. And, it took a long, long time. And DVD is huge now, obviously. And it's, I don't know if it's going to take as long for HD, DVD, or Blu-ray to catch on, whether one's going to be way more popular than the other right away or whatever. I just think that, you know, the industry may want consumers to choose and give a clear winner. That may be the case. I don't know, because the average consumer doesn't want to spend $1,000, like Rob said, on, you know, a glorified doorstop.
I just think that, you know, if you have a high-def TV, especially if you have a nice one, you know, not one you bought at Walmart for $200 that supposedly is high-definition, yet looks like a child was drawing the picture himself with crayons. If you get something real nice, you want to make the most out of it. And considering the lack of HD programming from television providers, satellite cable, and such, it almost seems imperative that you have to get something to fill the void, to give you some high-def content so you can actually feel like your purchase was well worth it. But high definition isn't only coming in the form of passive entertainment. We have active entertainment, and that brings us to the PS3, Xbox 360, and Wii. But we're going to focus on the PS3 this time because, well, she also says you shouldn't buy the PlayStation 3, namely because it's expensive and there's really no games out there for it right now, which would probably be a big issue for it. What do you guys think? See, when I look at the PlayStation 3, you know, we've bashed it a lot in the past on this show. Let's be honest. Neowin has not been kind to PlayStation 3. However, it's definitely a powerful machine. It's debatably the most powerful, or at least tied with the 360 for the most powerful machine on the market. Yet it's getting thrashed by the older 360 and the much less powerful Nintendo Wii. What's it going to take? You know, what do you guys think? Should people wait on the PS3, or should, you know, if they really want, should they just go out and get it and hope for the best?
Well, if you like the, you know, if you got the original PlayStation and you got the PlayStation 2, then there's going to be a lot of people who are just used to the PlayStation series, and so who will get it because it's the next update, really. But in terms of are there better things out there? Well, it seems that there are in terms of what they actually deliver for the money, because as we've stated before, there's limited games for it, and it's very expensive, the PS3. So, I mean, I'm not going to buy it, but, you know, I say this before, I'm not a gamer, but I just think that for somebody who is maybe starting out in the world of console gaming, then it just seems that there are more financially viable and value applications that you can actually use in terms of, let's go for the Wii or the 360. Now, maybe they're not as powerful as the PS3, but they sure seem to have got support from the public, and people, you know, as we stated before with the previous story, people are voting with their feet, and they're just not buying them quite the same way that they're buying the others.
Well, I think the big thing with the PS3 is the price. I don't care what Sony says. I think the $600 price tag is probably the big one. As for whether people should buy it, look, I'm not going to get into an argument on which console is better. You could do a whole podcast on that, so I won't even get into that. Needless to say, PlayStation 3 is a powerful system. It's going to have some really awesome games. It has good games now, maybe not a lot, but it has some. It has a PlayStation Network, more and more stuff on there. It is backwards compatible. Sorry, UK guys, it's not as compatible with you. Sorry to hear that. You know, it's a good system, don't get me wrong. Microsoft had a year head start with the 360 and the Wii, because it's a lower, much lower price point, and obvious certain games obviously has a bigger audience right now. But the PlayStation 3 is a powerful system. It's going to have some good games. Then the only thing negative about the PS3 right now is that so many quote-unquote exclusive titles for the system are now being made for competing platforms, including the 360 and the Wii, obviously, and the PC in some cases. I think that is a big issue for Sony, because you have, let's take Assassin's Creed, for example. which was announced as a PS3 exclusive, and then all of a sudden it's coming out for the PC. And I don't remember. Maybe it might be 360 as also. I don't remember now. But it's definitely coming out for the PC as well. And, you know, there's other games. It's rumored that the next Metal Gear Solid, which is going to be obviously a huge hit, is going not to be exclusive. It's going to be made for 360, which I don't think is going to happen. But there's Warhawk, which I've been a little busy. I haven't posted any news lately. But Warhawk, which was a big, big game that I was looking forward to, which actually made me want to buy a system, is now only going to be a downloadable multiplayer-only game on the PlayStation Network, which is a huge blow, I think, for Sony. And this is what they have to work on. They got to work on their games, get more games out there, and they have to keep them damn games exclusive. That's the bottom line for the PS3. As for people avoiding it, I think it's just premature to avoid it. I think it's a good system, and if people have the money, they should go and get it.
You know, Todd, you bring up a point about the price, and you know, I'll ask you first, and Rob obviously want your opinion too, but what do you think is going to be more important to get the PlayStation 3 moving? More games or a lower price?
Right now, both. I think the price is a big issue for a lot of people, but I think the games are another issue. I mean, there are good games out for the PS3. Don't get me wrong. There's Resistance, there's Madden, and all the other, you know, the EA series. There's a few games out for the system, and they don't suck. They're good.
Not many, you know? My friend, not many.
Well, there's not many. Don't forget, Sony had a lot of issues with supply. There's a lot of companies weren't ready for it still. So, yeah, there are issues with games. But they do need to get more games out there. And now the second-gen games are coming out soon, including a lot of them in Japan right now. And they're much better graphically, from what I understand. Well, not much better, but they're better. Support better AF and better resolution, higher resolution than the 1080i or whatever the hell it is. And yeah, I think both of those are issues with Sony, because the price, the $600 price tag is fairly high. I mean, let's be honest, $600 is a lot of money to plunk down on a little piece of hardware that's going to sit on your coffee table or whatever. And I think the fact that there's only 32 games currently for the system at last week, I think it was 32 games. That is a fairly big issue. Xbox 360 obviously has way more than 32 games, and the Wii, I don't know how many games it has, but it has more than 32 games, that's for sure. So Sony needs to work on both those issues. I think those are the two issues that people are worrying about most, both of them.
For me, I think it's probably more the game, because people buy a console to play a game. They don't buy games to play on their console. You know, people go out, you know, they buy the console because they've seen the game that they want to play. So for that reason, I think increasing the availability and the scope and the just how many games there actually are out there is going to do a lot more. Because if you can persuade people to part with $600, I still think it's ridiculously high. But if you're showing to consumers that they're getting value out of their $600, then people will do it. If there's enough games out there of decent quality, and if they make the most of their online network, then I truly believe that the price isn't going to be so much of an issue as perhaps once thought. It's the fact that coupled with the price tag, we don't have very many games, and it's those two factors when combined together that are causing so many issues with the PS3 at the moment.
I guess being able to have the quote-unquote privilege / curse of working in a retail environment, I've been able to see that, well, we have, last time I checked, we had 36 around PS3s in stock and no Wii's whatsoever. So, to me, that symbolizes that maybe people are looking at the price a little more. And by the way, a certain Sony executive would owe me $43,200 for spotting those 33 PlayStation 3s on the shelf. But that's another story. But yes, I mean, it definitely seems like I speak to people about PS3, and while I think the price does need to be brought down, I think Todd has a point with the games, though, because, and Rob, you too, because I speak to people and I ask them, why don't you get a PS3? What's the play on it right now? You know, you have Resistance, that's it. You can get Madden on any other system. It's Resistance that your people only have right now, and that's a decent game at best. It's not a mind-blowing, out-of-this-world game. So it definitely seems like, you know, if I were recommending people right now, yeah, I would hold off on it, say, give it a few months, see what the developers pump out, and then plunk your money down. You may even be lucky enough to hit a price reduction at the same time. So, final word, Rob, recommend or not recommend?
Definitely not recommend.
Todd?
Partially recommend.
Thanks for not giving a definite answer. You're so politically correct. We're gonna go on to
no problemo.
To the third device, though. This is Draft N wireless routers. For those of you who don't know, there are, you know, wireless routers when you have DSL cable in your home. And there are right now there are three existing versions that have been finalized. There's 802.11a, which is ancient, 802.11b, which is old, 802.11g, which is what most people are using right now, and they're trying to come up with a new, faster version called 802.11n. Now, to give you some ideas of how much faster, it can first of all, for you geeks out there, it can operate on either the 2.4 gigahertz or 5 gigahertz frequency, so it'll give you a little more flexibility, especially avoiding cordless phones and the such. But as far as data rates go, the typical data rate for 802.11g, which is what we're using now, is 24 megabits a second, as opposed to 802.11n, which is 200 megabits a second. The maximum tends to be 54 megabits for G and 540 for N. The problem here is, though, these routers right now out are called Draft N routers because the 802.11 system itself has not been finalized. They're still changing things in it to market standards, trying to come up with an industry standard so anyone can make an 802.11n router. So while you get a performance boost right now, you're not guaranteed to get, you know, to have a router that's going to be fully compliant with 802.11n standards when they release. Right now, they're estimating release for May 2009. So this lady recommends not buying an 802.11 draft N router. What do you guys, you know, do you guys agree, disagree? Rob, start with you.
Well, first of all, for my transatlantic friends, I'm going to call it a router just because that's what we call it over here. And okay. As someone who studies networking at university, that's my main degree that I'm doing. I think it's awful. I think it's absolutely terrible that these companies, I mean, I don't know, obviously all the other router manufacturers have just been following suit and they have to do it for business reasons. But for the original company, I don't know who it was that came out with the first draft end router. I got a bit of a reputation last week for saying they should be shot, but really I agree entirely again. I just think it's awful. It's no good for consumers at all because they're being, you know, lured to get these wonderful new devices with spangly sort of you know, multicolored fluorescent labels on the packaging. And yet there's absolutely no guarantee that those that are actually dealing with the specification are going to standardize it and that this is going to work. So what we're doing, we're getting sort of proprietary, you know, manufacturer-specific routers that don't even, you know, even draft-n routers from one manufacturer don't even work properly with draft-n adapters from another company. It's just a terrible state of affairs, and it's all completely driven by a market desire to gain more market share. There's absolutely no consideration for the consumer here whatsoever. It's actually something which does wind me up.
Yeah, I have to agree with Rob. I think it's pretty disgusting that these companies are doing this, releasing and adapters that don't even use a completed specification. I think it's really disgusting, and it's just, frankly, I didn't even believe it when I read it. I didn't even know that they can do that. I mean, to me, that would seem illegal to do. I mean, almost. It's just retarded, really.
Yeah, see, it actually came up in a show. I can't remember. It was one of our early shows. We actually discussed draft N routers, and even then we agreed that while N is a great idea, you know, it's very early in the game. Even it was earlier in the game back then. It was about a year ago we discussed it. So, and these have been out for about a year, year and a half now. So it seems a little premature, these companies, and it really makes you think, you know, are they maybe preying on the fact that people always want faster and better? That maybe, I hate to put it so deviously, but that basically tricking customers into buying something that they haven't clearly specified as being not guaranteed to work in 2-3 years down the line when 802.11n is finally finalized. That's a little redundant, but you know, it definitely does bother me, and I actually agree with this, which her name is Stacy, on this for once, because it seems as though, you know, you'd be a fool to spend upwards of $150, $160 for a draft end router just to get these great speeds now that, well, you might have to go plunk down another $150, $160 a few years from now simply because, well, you were premature to the punch and wound up getting a router that's no longer compliant with the rest of the market. It's definitely, to quote Rob, because I love this saying, a sad state of affairs. And yes, the original person who decided to put one out should be shot. That's Rob, by the way. I'm quoting him. So, final word, Rob, recommend, no recommend?
God, no. Get a G router. Greater compatibility and half the price.
Todd, I'm guessing I know your answer, but recommend, not recommend?
Not recommend. Get a Grouter also.
Alright, I'm gonna stick with my router pronunciation. We're going to move on, though, to probably the most controversial of the don't buy this recommendations, and that's Windows Vista. I shouldn't act so jerky towards her, because I can almost understand where people should wait a little bit to getting Vista. It's new, it's fabulous, to quote some fashion show person, whatever, but there are some compatibility issues, there are chinks in the armor, to say the least. I've had some wonderful issues with it not letting me delete any file, like a certain folder on my system. Thanks. So yeah, it's definitely a fledgling, but it's gone through, 5 years of development, so it's decently supported by now. Companies like NVIDIA and Creative seemingly don't want to support it, because God forbid they put out drivers that actually work well. But, it's hard to say yes or no, definitely. I think for the average user, a jump to Vista isn't that bad. I think it's the power users, the guys who want to get the most frames per second out of their video games, that should hold off on jumping to Vista, while Joe Schmo sitting at home, who opens his email once a day, goes online for half hour, an hour, and that's it. Why not upgrade to Vista? It's safer. It's definitely more refined than XP. We had this whole show about it. But Todd, I'll start with you. You agree, disagree with her? What's your view on people jumping to Vista right now?
Well, I agree somewhat. Here's the thing, when it comes to an operating system at release, even something that's been in beta, like in alpha testing for like half a decade, sure, it's going to be decently stable, but there's always going to be issues. It doesn't matter how much testing they do. There's going to be issues. Microsoft is, if they're fairly fast at fixing stuff. I mean, some people complain they're kind of slow. I don't think they're that slow. I mean, they're fairly fast. Whether or not you want to plunk down, $240 or whatever it is for the home premium, or I don't know how much Vista Ultimate is, but I'm assuming it's like $300. If you want to spend that kind of money on a system that just came out, go for it. I mean, really, it's a beautiful operating system. I think the eye candy is great. I really do. I think it's really nice. Some of the new features are really good. It's I ran the beta for like a week, and I had to get off it because I was having major sound problems. But that wasn't because of Vista. That was because of Creative. Yay! I think it's a good system. Ran stable as all hell for me. I didn't have any problems whatsoever. As for her not recommending it as something to go and buy, I don't know. I agree because it's new. I don't agree because I've used it a little and I didn't have any problems, and I know most people don't have any problems. And if you want the latest and greatest, and if you have a DirectX 10 video card, you're going to have no choice but to go to Vista. So there's really no reason not to. Let's put it that way.
I think that if you're buying a new computer, then it makes no sense not to go with Vista if you've got the option. But for somebody that is just upgrading their computer, and if they were going out to buy it, personally, I don't recommend it at the moment. I think that there's too many issues with drivers and compatibility, and I've got to say, I don't think it's Microsoft's fault in the slightest. I think this is purely issues with third-party driver manufacturers who are just not doing their jobs, basically. I don't know what they're doing from 9 to 5 each day, but it certainly isn't writing decent drivers. So I think if I'm talking to people that are just buying the operating system standalone, in shrink wrap on the shelves, then I'd probably say no, at the moment it isn't really worth it. You'll more than likely find drivers and issues with your hardware that just won't run the way you want it to. That's just the kind of, that's just me being realistic about it. I don't think it's a fault with Microsoft, as I said previously. I think they've made a decent, solid operating system. I just think it's really unfortunate. I don't know whether it may be Microsoft were late at giving all the API information, or maybe it's simply the fact that manufacturers haven't been getting their asses in gear, basically. But either way, I just don't recommend it at the moment, unless you have a computer that is being bought specifically where the components are known to work well with Vista. That's a different matter. So, no, for me, got to agree with this woman. No, I don't recommend it.
Yeah, see, Rob, you bring up a point of buying a new computer, then yeah, get Vista. Well, it seems as though you really have no choice at this point because most of the retail sector has already completely converted to Vista. And I was doing a quick browsing of even Dell's website, and yeah, you'd be hard pressed to find an XP machine left on there. So it seems as though Vista is pretty much here to stay. And it's a tough situation to be in because you have XP at home, you're happy with XP, suddenly your computer breaks. So you go to buy a new computer, you have to get Vista, but now, if you have a creative card in there, you can't use all the creative features. If you have an NVIDIA card in there, well, good luck gaming, because that's not going to work too well for you. So it's an odd position to be in. However, I'm going to have to disagree with Stacy and say, yeah, I'd recommend Vista. I think for the average user, as long as you're not a power user, I'd say, yeah, go with Vista. So, Rob, your final thoughts? Recommend? No?
No, I don't.
No? Todd?
Yeah, I'd have to say recommend.
All right, cool. And we're going to move on to our last one, which is, this is a little out of my field, but I'm going to pretend I know what I'm talking about anyway, and that's 10 megapixel digital cameras. She basically says that there's no need for 10 megapixel cameras right now, that they're just really trying to milk more money out of you, and that for the average user who wants a point-and-shoot camera, 5 megapixels is enough. She's quoting a Consumer Reports electronics editor, Mr. Paul Reynolds. I don't know. See, I find it hard. I'm not a photography master by any stretch of the term. You know, I'm a novice at best. But even I think that you, at this point in time, if you want to take good pictures, you should go 6, 7, maybe 8 megapixels. But yeah, 10 megapixels does seem to be a stretch as far as, you know, what the average consumer needs. Todd, I'll start with you again. Would you recommend someone go with a 10 megapixel right now? Would you go with her suggestion of saying, nah, all you need is about 5 megapixels, or would you try to play the field somewhere in the middle?
Well, I'll agree with her here because while I know nothing about photography other than, you know, you get the flash and the click thing, but I know people who are into photo editing and taking photos and all that stuff, and they won't even go 10 megapixels. I have a friend that has a 8.2 megapixel camera, I think it is, or I'm not sure exactly, maybe 8.4 megapixel. I'm not sure how the numbers work, so I don't remember exactly. But he loves that camera, and I asked him about this the other day because I saw a 10 megapixel camera on Best Buy or CircuitCity.com, one of them. And, you know, it was like, I don't know how much it was. It wasn't cheap. And he said he's not going to go for 10 megapixels. He said there's no reason to right now, because he gets what he wants out of the 8 megapixel, or, you know, these other guys with 7 megapixels, or even 5 megapixels. I don't know if an actual photographer is going to stay with 5 megapixels, they may want to go to 7, but 10, I think, is overdoing it a bit much. I don't know if the companies are doing it to milk consumers, or just to upgrade the cameras again, or I don't know what it is, but yeah, I'd have to agree that I would avoid a 10 megapixel camera right now. In the future, you know, maybe. Just not now, that's for sure.
I think I agree again. Unfortunately, the consumers have been tricked into this whole concept of, you know, the greater the number, the better the camera and the better your pictures will be. When the reality is, if you're not a photographer, you're not going to get photographer-style prints. You're going to get happy snaps that work just fine. And for me, that's what I love. My camera is, I think mine is 6 megapixels, or maybe it's 5. But really, I don't need anything over that, because the important thing to note is that with the megapixels, it basically increases the size of the picture, both in dimensions and in file size. Therefore, you have greater detail that is included. However, it depends what you're going to do with it. If you're going to print it, then the greater the megapixels, the better, really, because dependent on your printer and depending on how the size is, then it basically means that you can print larger prints, which is good for some people. But for those that are maybe only taking pictures for their blog or for screen use, then they're literally going to be chopping it down to only about 1 megapixel anyway. So they're not going to be using any of that information. So I would say, yeah, absolutely. People have been just misguided in thinking that somehow they're going to get better quality prints and better quality photos. I think, yes, your prints may be slightly better if you've got more megapixels, because just the way that you know, a printer has more image to play with, and therefore it's going to look better to the eye. But in terms of pixel representation on the screen, then you're just not going to use it. A friend of mine has got an 8 megapixel camera, and she actually just brings it down to 5 megapixels simply because the file size is better. She knows what she's using it for, and her memory card is limited in its space, so she simply steps it down to 5 megapixels. So consumers need to get out of this mindset that somehow their pictures are going to be better if they've got higher megapixels. Ultimately, going on a photography course is going to get you better pictures than buying the latest and greatest camera.
Yeah, that's a good recommendation. It comes back to the whole bigger is better theory that doesn't always work. Intel proved that. I should say AMD proved that with their Athlon 64 processors back in the day. Intel's proven that now with their processors that are lower clock speed, and it goes for all ends of the market. Bigger is not always better. In this case, you know, I can't sit here and recommend a 5 megapixel camera, I'm sorry, but I would have to say, you know, go 6 megapixels, we'll say, for the average user. If you want some good quality shots, go with an 8 megapixel the most. You really don't need 10 megapixels at this time. Also, too, a lot of it's going to come down to things like the CCD in the camera and all like that. Just because a camera has a 10 megapixel rating doesn't mean it's going to give you good quality pictures as far as color saturation and the such goes. So you probably want to go for a good quality 6-7 megapixel camera instead of spending the extra money on a low quality 10 megapixel camera. So I'm going to agree with Stacy here. I'm not going to recommend a 10 megapixel camera. Todd, your recommendation, non-recommendation?
Not recommended, yeah.
And Rob?
Yep, absolutely. I did a bit of a rant earlier, and I'm standing by it.
All right, so we all agreed, don't buy a 10 megapixel camera, you fools. If you do, well, we can point and laugh at you. But with that, it's the end of the show. It's been a wonderful journey, boys and girls. We've had a magical time. But we're actually going to, before we finish the show off, we're going to get into our usual blank of the week. I'm still working on a better name for that whole segment. But we're going to start with Todd and his game of the week.
Yes, the game of the week for this week and probably next week or month or I don't know is Crackdown, period, end of story.
Yeah.
Get it, buy it, play it.
Yeah, I can agree with Todd there. I've been playing with him in co-op mode. I play a little with Meshuga. I hope I'm not butchering his name from Neowin. It's been it's a fun game. My doubts that Microsoft is using the Halo 3 simply just to push a game that was mediocre otherwise. Well, whew, I was definitely wrong about that because the game is phenomenally addicting. You definitely have to watch time because time flies by as you're blowing stuff up left and right. You know, you're losing 2 or 3 hours of your day. So it's definitely a great game. Thanks, Todd. I'm going to mention my song of the week. Dun, dun, dun. And it's actually going to be from a band who's going to have an album coming out at the beginning of April. The name of the band is Chevelle. And it's going to be the first single from their last album, Vitamin R, in parentheses, Leading Us Along. It's a great song. If you like Tool at all, you'll like Chevelle. I'm sure most rock fans have heard Chevelle by now, but for people listening to mainstream radio, you may not have heard. They do have a new single out from the new album. The album's going to be called Vena Sera. The new single is called Well Enough Alone. Good song. You can check it out on their MySpace. I think it's myspace.com/Chevelle or something like that. But yeah, definitely check it out. That's Chevelle, Vitamin R. And Rob, of course, you got to take us out with your code of the week, my friend.
Absolutely, the famous code of the week. Well, for this time, it's more of a technique on websites. So too many people are still stuck in the 1990s and have websites where it has splash screens. And you sort of go there and you've got a nice little pretty flash animation and then it says click to enter. Don't do them, please. People want to go on your website and they want to find out content. That is why you have a website. You do not have a website to showcase your favorite font. This is not what it's all about. So please, let people come to their content first and foremost. I beg of you, please stop having splash screens. There's absolutely no reason for it. This is not like you're doing an advert on TV. It's not what it's for. People want to get your contact information. They want to see the main content of your site. So please skip it.
Yeah.
Can I change my game of the week to no flash things in front of websites also? Because I hate that.
One thing I should to back Todd up, Rob up on that. There was a study done, I think maybe September or October last year, where if people couldn't get to the site they wanted to get to and get to at least the area they wanted to get to and get this 4 seconds, they would go to another site. So a splash screen is only going to slow people down, and it's going to stop them from coming back in the future. So yeah, definitely get rid of those damn splash screens. I'm 100% with Rob on this one. I actually knew what he was talking about again. All right, go me. But yeah, You listen to the man. He knows what he's talking about. But yes, now our magical journey is over. It's been fun. Todd, Rob, I want to thank you both, as always, for coming on board. Thank you. Have a good night, guys. To everyone out there in Neowinland, have a good one.